Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club for this morning. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
A busy morning, just what Adam White loves. Morning, Whitey.
Good morning.
Ooh, short and sharp today. Short and sharp.
What's happened?
There's been an incident.
Yeah, a little bit disappointed this morning, but we move on from that because last night The Bachelor went from 3 to 2.
I can't believe there was a huge shock.
There was a huge shock because Tara, who I took at $15 early on in the event.
Right. What happened to Tara?
Unexpectedly was removed from the show.
Well, so this is why you're in shock?
Well, I'd heard $15 and I was told from my consultant that we're in a very good place.
Well, you were.
$15, $15 was looking very good. And all of a sudden, she doesn't even make the top two. So no layoff activity.
I can't believe you're investing in this financially, let alone emotionally. Adam Ramanowska sitting here shaking his head, the former Bomber champ. Good morning, Rama.
Good morning. I can't believe how flat one man gets on The Bachelor.
it's called The Punt.
Well, is it? I actually think you're just more invested in the show than The Punt. I just think you actually like the show.
Well, I do.
that's problematic.
If you invest on The Bachelor financially, that becomes a very good show.
Will you be watching The Bachelorette with Sophie Monk?
Depends if I can find any value.
It's all about value.
So that's a yes.
It's all about value. Damn. What happened to... So Laura's number one seed now.
Well, this is the problem for me because I've declared her a false favourite throughout.
So not only is the $15 pop gone,
that's right.
But the false favourite is your late on Betfair.
Chosen to ignore her chances throughout the course of the tournament. And she's sitting there $1.40 favourite last night thinking she's not even going to make the top three. Anyway.
Oh, who would have thought that reality television could throw up such curveballs?
Right.
Who would have thought, Whitey, that would have happened? Now, we've got a busy morning to come, but there's been plenty of news going on in the world of AFL footy. And yesterday, we spoke to Wayne Campbell about Josh Kelly.
Yes.
And he dropped a little zinger about 2018 and 19 on the program, Rama, and we thought, hang on a second, did he just say what we think he said? Are you hearing that Josh is going to hang for another 2 years at the Giants? Seems to be one of the stories. I think Jared was talking about it last night on 360.
Yeah, I think so. But still, I think they'd be nervous because, excuse me, I think he probably should have then committed on the eve of the final series if that was going to happen to give what's the right way to put it? I guess some impetus. Yeah, yeah. Some excitement around the group.
Good work.
What they need, what they lacked against Adelaide last Thursday night, but still for it not to have happened, I still think there'll be a slight concern.
Right.
A slight concern because, and I say that because obviously North Melbourne is a team that are interested. Now, they know they didn't get Dustin Martin.
Yes.
So you wonder if a phone call was made to Josh Kelly's management saying, well, we may have a couple of more dollars for you now.
Apparently North Melbourne have got some money to spend.
That's what I keep hearing. I keep hearing that they're splashing cash left, right,
well,
and centre. No one wants the cash.
They have money for both of them.
So that's not going to happen. So, but the phrasing, the terminology, the words used by Wayne Campbell yesterday were odd if it wasn't going to be that case.
I think the interest from what Wayne Campbell said yesterday and from what we sort of since gathered is that it's a two-year deal, which I think is a very smart play from Kelly and from Paul Collins, his manager, because, you know, he could very easily say, well, I'll stay for 4 or 5 because of the length of term that's been offered by other clubs. But all he can do now is, at the very worst, he's going to hold his value. Stay for another 2 years, try and win that premiership, maybe try and win 2 or 3 premierships in that time. And then I think he gets into the sweet spot of his career at 24, and that's when he can sign the Dustin Martin type contract. So I think that, okay, it's deferring a long-term commitment, but they've still got him for another 2, and he's got 2 years to work out what he wants to do. Is that, as a manager, Rama, that's sort of the process?
Yep, absolutely.
I'm with you. It's a pretty smart play. Gives him 2 years to consolidate and develop himself again to be the player that everyone thinks he might be.
Yeah.
And then by that time, it's real peak period. He can go big.
Because he might go to North Melbourne in 2 years' time when North Melbourne have got 2 more years' worth of development into a young list. And he comes in and becomes the cream on top of the cake with a bit more evidence of what North Melbourne's about with this next generation. He might go somewhere else. But I just think timing-wise, he's doing the right
thing. I don't necessarily think there'll be more money for him, though, in 2 years' time.
No, 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 but I think it's more he will feel a lot more comfortable about where he goes with the evidence that he's got at a couple of different clubs. I mean, Essendon's another one that was into him. Now, I'd still say the jury's out a little bit on what Essendon will be in 2 years' time. They've got a lot of good young players, but they've also got a lot of very much older players that won't be there in 2 years' time. How do they look in 2 years? I just think it's a smart play.
What about the situation at the Bulldogs? While we're talking player movement and possible movement, Jake Stringer has clearly been one of the talking points in the last week or so. And extraordinary revelations by Luke Beveridge. Mark Robinson, I was reading the story last night online on the Herald Sun. He's got the story in the back page today that spoken to Bevo about moving Jake Stringer on and why that has happened or wanting to move him on. Can you recall, Whitey, we'll get to Ram in a second, can you recall a coach talking about moving a player of this ilk, an All-Australian player a couple of years ago, moving him on before they've actually moved him on, like this far out from the trade period? I don't recall it ever happening.
Look, I can't off the top of my head. I'm sure that there'll be some listeners out there that can think of some examples. I think there's a lot more going on at the Bulldogs than what we know.
What do you mean?
There's too much drama. There's too many people leaving that football club in a variety of different positions. Obviously, they didn't make the finals. Now, it's very easy to say, oh, it's an even competition. They qualified seventh last year and had a good month and all this sort of thing.
Yeah.
There is too many stories. There is too much chatter. There's too much, but there's also evidence of staff leaving, of coaches leaving, of people in the football department leaving. Now Jake Stringer, All-Australian 2 years ago, leaving. It's just a bit bizarre.
Jake's management and the club got together and both agreed we'd explore alternatives to him playing at the club and explore what's right for his long-term future and the club's, Beveridge said yesterday. Rammer, yep. If you're in a position, now you're not managing Jake Stringer, Paul Connors manages Jake Stringer. If you're in that situation with a player like Jake Stringer, an All-Australian quality player, and there is some unrest, clearly, and has been from what we're led to believe for a little while. Are you wanting the coach to come out and talk about this far out? Does it limit your opportunities, or perhaps does it give an opportunity for a club to go and try and get him for unders, which might hinder the deal, which might keep him at the Bulldogs and put more stress on the relationship?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, if I'm his manager, I'm wrapped. Luke Beveridge is coming out and saying that because Stringer's still contracted. So the problem always is if you're trying to move a player under contract, the club will just continue to dig their heels in and say, no, he's a contracted player. But obviously Luke Beveridge, and I think it's very mature by Luke Beveridge, what he's doing here and saying, you know, it's just not working out. We're going to go and try get the best possible deal we can. If not, if you read on in the article, if not, if a trade doesn't satisfy the club, we'll keep him and we'll try work with him.
Yeah, quote is...
That won't happen.
You asked if it's irretrievable. It's not. Ultimately, Jake is still playing at the football club. Then we've just got to work through that next year.
Yeah, but that he won't be at the Bulldogs. I think this is just a breakdown of trust both ways, probably. I think that Jake's had his issues, but I think the Bulldogs have also had their issues with him. And I think it's just a situation where it's a breakdown and you know, let's just cut our losses now. And, you know, in an ideal world, the Bulldogs would love to keep Jake Stringer when he's back playing the footy he was. Yeah. He hasn't done that now for 2 years. That's a reality.
Yeah, but that's
he can get back to his best. He's still young enough. You know, we think of Dustin Martin only a few years ago when he's, you know, being toured, taking the tour of Spotless Stadium and
he's
all
kicked
sorts
more
of
goals
things.
Than any other player at the Bulldogs in that period of time.
Yeah, no, I understand, but he's not the footballer he was 2 years ago. For a variety of different reasons.
I still think he's in the development phase of his career.
I don't disagree with that either. But what a club needs to give up to get him now is a lot less than what they would have had to have in this trade period two years ago.
And that's where probably I disagree again a little bit because the Bulldogs hold his rights because of he's contracted to them.
But clearly this is getting on the front foot from the Bulldogs' perspective saying, look, we're happy for him to move. That's what Luke Beveridge is saying here. We're happy for him to move. So they won't push up too, dig their heels in, as Whitey said before, too much, would they?
The opposite is Carlton with Bryce Gibbs. They said, we want Bryce. We would only accept this type of deal for Bryce to go. So
yeah, it's a very different conversation.
Very, very different conversation.
Different language.
The Bulldogs are saying, yeah, we're happy for him to move, but we still want the right deal.
Yeah, but you would have taken your two first-round draft picks to get him 2 years ago. you're going to get him now for one pick between 8 and 15.
According to the story from Robert, it's about $500,000 a year and a pick between 10 and 25. Is that about right, Rama?
Yep.
For that sort of dollars player, all-Australian player, 10 and 25?
Age.
It's not a bad deal, really. If you can get him for 20.
What is he, 23?
23 years, yeah.
He's got 10 years of football left in him.
Well, I'm suggesting that's sort of under still. No, I know he hasn't performed in the last couple of years.
So do I. I actually think that's probably a touch under. So I would have thought he's anywhere from, you know, maybe pick 7 to 15, around that range.
And this is the thing, is that St Kilda has got, we talked about this, St Kilda's got two picks under 10, sort of in that sort of 8-9 range. Essendon's first pick will be about 11.
Yeah.
They're into him.
The Hawks. They'll trade in somewhere. They'll find a way to trade in somewhere. Just include me.
Yeah, exactly. Buddy's war chest.
You can't trade 5 years down the track.
Of course you can. Pick.
You can't Why do that. Not?
Yeah, I just think it's an interesting situation because the suitors have got weaponry to get him quite easily. Yeah.
Look out for the Saints. They've got two picks. Yeah, Look out for the Brisbane Lions.
Well, see, this is the thing. He's got two young kids. Was it three young kids?
Two.
Two young kids that I imagine he'd want to still be close to, even though he's separated from his partner. Moving interstate might not be an option for him, so he might be limited to a smaller field.
I think the Brisbane Lions have got a very good hand at this draft at the moment.
Yeah, no
well, they
doubt.
Do. No, no doubt. Doubt. They do.
Why is Geelong interested? Or why? Why is he being linked to Geelong?
Well, I think he said that it's Essendon and Geelong.
How do they get him? They're going to get Ablett and they're going to get Stuart Cramery, they're going to get all sorts of things.
Cramery and
if you're a football club,
start pack forward line.
You want players. And Ablett. You want players linked to you. You want that.
Mm.
If players aren't linked to your football club and you're going for them, that's when you're sort of starting to worry a little bit.
Yes.
There's just no... That just means there's not that air of excitement around your club.
Yeah.
What about off the SMS? So what about Levi for Jake? Levi. Levi.
You need to put in a bit more...
Levi is signed.
Wow. Yeah. What's a contract? What do you mean you
sign
can't?
Sign trade.
What do you mean you can't?
Rules.
I wouldn't say he's definitely gone, Tom. I would say that, from what I can gather, Tom Rockliffe is weighing up his future. At some point in the near future, I would expect that he will be talking to other clubs. Chris Fagan, they were prepared to trade him last year. They didn't get the offers that they wanted. I think that there's an argument to say that Brisbane, if he decides to go, I don't think they'll fight it. He's a free agent too, Tom, so he can just walk. They would have he's a restricted free agent. They can theoretically match, but that never happens.
That was Jake Nile on Fox Footy yesterday talking about the possibility of Tom Rockliffe leaving, which we discussed, I think, yesterday. Was it yesterday or Tuesday? What? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was a bit early.
One of those days. Perhaps this year might be the year for Tom to leave the Brisbane Lions should the right deal come up. And even if the right deal doesn't come up, Brisbane might take it, according to what Jake was saying, perhaps yesterday.
So, Rama, we'll go to you as the expert. In a compensation scenario, are we looking at a first-round pick for Tom Rockliffe, or is it end of the first round?
No, his contract for an earlier first round pick would have to be, I think, north of $700,000 a year. So and then it becomes how many years also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon Brisbane will get a first rounder for him.
Yeah, maybe at the end, like end of first round, start of second round type of.
But it's still, we were talking about this earlier in the week, that it gives Brisbane a chance to again potentially blanket bomb a draft with five picks inside 23 or four.
Absolutely. I think they've got a great...
To complement what they did really well last year.
Even if Rockliffe stays, they're still going to have a great hand at this year's draft.
Mm. And then, you know, Josh Sakic is the other one that we thought was locked away and that he was going to continue his career. But that's still obviously up in the air. It could go either way as well.
Listening to Jake Niles' comments there, it's no, like, I think people are still surprised when a player is coming out of contract and they're speaking to other clubs. That's the norm. That's my job as a manager to go and gauge that interest. And now, if that club then wants to speak with that player, particularly when they've finished their season, that's going to happen more and more. It's just clubs doing their due diligence on that particular player, seeing if there's a right fit, doing a medical, all that type of stuff to make sure that the player that they are getting is what they want and what they expect, rather than getting somebody in that is probably not quite right, which we have seen in the past with players getting traded to clubs that they've got to that club and there's been a couple of little injury concerns that have bobbed up as soon as they got there.
Rightio. So we're slow on the uptake as footy fans. We're slow on this, and media. We're slow on this and making this more sensational than perhaps it actually is.
I don't think it's more sensational. I think that's what media try to do, in a sense, still, is try to sensationalise it more, like he's talking to another club. That's normal.
Yeah.
Get used to it.
I think it's like the FFA Cup, that the romance attached to the loyalty of players and clubs. It's not as romantic as what we think it is.
Every person in society at one stage or another wants to know how much they're worth.
That's true. That is true. Not a lot of romance last night, just by the way, for the Victorian teams.
I was watching the romance of The Bachelor. I missed that.
different edition of the romance. Well, the FFA Cup quarterfinals didn't go our way last night. Heidelberg, poor old Heidelberg, copped a 3-0 smacking to Adelaide United, which is not overly unexpected. Milosnic scored a hat-trick, 3rd, 11th and 61st minutes, so they were down 2-0 in 11 minutes. That was a bad result for the Heidelbergers.
What was
to get to that point, I think it's Milosnic. I think it's something like that. And Sydney FC defeated Melbourne City 2-0, which was a bit of a setback for our friends at City. We spoke to Luke Bratton the other day. He was bullish about their opportunities, but no, in front of 4,000 people at Leichhardt Oval, they disappeared from the competition as well in the quarterfinal stage. So I don't think we've got any one left, have we?
No.
In the romance.
Doesn't appear to be the case.
And the Champions League too, just by the way, some scores this morning. There's plenty happening. Liverpool and Sevilla, 2-2, 82nd minute mark, around about that period for all these games. Besiktas and Porto, 2-1 to Besiktas. Real Madrid, 3-0 over Apollo Nicosia. Shakhtar Donetsk, 2-1 over Napoli. That's much easier. Spartak Moskva, 1-0 over Maribor. RP Leipzig, 1-1 with Monaco. That's a bit easy to say. Tottenham 3-1. There you go. Whitey, 3-1 over Dortmund.
Kane scored twice.
Kane Corns. And Man City, 4-0 up over Feyenoord.
They're putting some goals on the board at the moment, Man City.
We've got a text here saying that Bryce Gibbs will announce some sort of thing today about his intentions.
Ooh.
That's a text message coming through.
Now, we're not...
What happens there?
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't know whether he can do that.
Well, he did it last year.
Well, no.
Why would he do it this year?
I don't think he really did it. I think it just emerged in trade week through management and clubs that he wanted to leave. He didn't sort of have a press conference.
Well, I'm not sure he
LeBron
did.
LeBron James style. Say,
I love that management always get the blame. Management.
Well, it wasn't that. It was Adelaide came
management's
out.
Management's fault.
Adelaide came out that time.
You're trying to do dodgy deals all the time, your managers. So just stand up for yourselves.
We do what's in the best interest of our client.
Can I just... What do you think will happen with Bryce? You probably can't talk
about it. Oh, I got no idea.
Is he part of the stable, is he? Is he part of your stable? Okay, right.
Yeah, I got no idea. That's the truth.
Can I just bring something to the table before the 6:30 news?
Yeah.
The Bachelor.
No. I've discovered something.
What have you discovered?
If I said to you HSP, what would you say?
I'd say good, thanks.
HSP. Nah.
No idea what you're talking about. What's HSP?
Halal Snack Pack.
What do you want about?
Have you had one of them before?
I haven't come across a halal snack pack.
I'm fairly conservative with my eating.
You're boring.
Chicken Kiev, that's probably as elaborate as I get. And I would never have eaten a halal snack pack before.
What's in a halal snack pack?
It's a new thing.
Well, tell me what's in it.
That's a craze.
Yeah.
It's like... souvlaki meat thing.
Oh, yeah,
on top of a bed of chips.
Yeah. Are you talking?
And then you're getting the cheese and the barbecue sauce and maybe the garlic sauce.
So it's sort of an open
polystyrene container.
So it's an open souvlaki kebab style
with chips
bed of chips.
Yeah. A bed of chips.
I think we need to trial this.
Now,
well, this is like we've got issues with the Parma on top of the chips. We have issues with
this is a little bit different because it's
broken up.
Yeah, and then now. I hear halal snack pack. I'm not going anywhere near it. But my wife got it, and she said, "Oh, you like this? Have a look at it. Eat it." And then she told me what it was, and I was sort of a little bit taken aback initially. And now it's become a regular staple. I feel it's almost a community service announcement.
Just to get
it out there, because this is something that dreams are made of.
I had the Mongolian beef last night for dinner. Very nice.
I'm keen to investigate the halal snack pack opportunities.
I think we might need a little lunch date.
Is there a franchise opportunity?
They're everywhere. Right. Youths are eating them around Melbourne at the moment. You can see them. since I've been open to this, you youths. See them. They are. They eat them everywhere.
Those crazy youths. they're eating the HSPs willy-nilly. It's a frenzy.
You've got to have one before Rammer's in next time.
Right.
Well, that's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. So it's going to be a bit of a setback. There's no better ticket at the moment than being into the heart of the Richmond Football Club. The Tiger train is up and about. Preliminary final is in the offing for them next Friday night, next Saturday it's going to be. Jack Riewoldt's a big part of that campaign, of course. He's the star from the Tigers. He's back again. Good morning, Jack.
Hey, Half. How are you?
Going well, mate. Preliminary final. How's that sound?
Yeah, pretty good. Rolls off the tongue nicely.
It's nice. I imagine, too, considering the situation you found yourself in last weekend, last Friday night against Geelong, you got a chance to sort of suck it in the last 5 or 10 minutes too. What was that like?
It's a hard one because you just want to continue to get everything right. So for us, we really wanted to play right to the final siren. And yeah, I even think that Shane Edwards laid a really good tackle in the last 13 seconds of the game, which sort of typified the way we played for the whole game. So, It's obviously an enjoyable feeling, and you could tell the fans really enjoyed the last part of that last quarter, and we sort of stuck fat for most of the game, and then were able to break it up in that last sort of quarter and kick a few goals and obviously get the win.
Speaking of the fans and the noise, 95,000 people there on the Friday night, it was extreme. I was at the Carlton final a couple of years ago. I can't remember what year it was, but that was the loudest I've ever heard the MCG. What was Saturday night's compared to that?
I was a bit different the Carlton one because all the Richmond fans were at the Punt Road end, and it was sort of like this yellow and black wave, I reckon, just that stand there, because that's where they were all seated, and we run towards that direction, and it was amazing, that first one. On the weekend, it was a bit of more of a cauldron. So we sort of probably had, I reckon, 75-80% of the fans there. So they were everywhere. And I'm looking forward to the preliminary final because I think we'll once again have the majority of the crowd there. So it's going to be loud. It truly is an addictive feeling running out of the race for that first time, slapping the captain on the hand and then going through the banner, and as soon as you go through the banner, just the absolute roar you hear is really addictive and something that wherever my football career takes me, I will never ever forget.
Can I ask you, I was just going to ask you that, and you've just sort of answered it, but is it everything you dreamt it would be to play in a final with 95,000 people at the MCG and to win a final? I mean, you've grown up, you love your footy, you watch a lot of sport. Is that almost as good as it's got for you?
It's an amazing feeling. During the game, you actually don't feel the crowd as much as what you would think from an outsider's perspective, because you're so hell-bent on getting the little things right, and you're so caught up in the game, and you can't give away sort of any seconds, really, to think about it too much. It's the stops in play where you really notice it, so obviously start of the game, first bounce and whatnot. But other than that, until the final siren, you're just in this competitor's mode that that you have to be in. So it is an absolute fantasy to play in those big games. And all the commentary I've heard from people at the game said it was one of the most amazing experiences of their life at anywhere, including the MCG. So we're obviously really blessed to be able to play our home games at the MCG.
So it was interesting that Damien Hardwick has said that he wants you to embrace what this is all about. It's not necessarily about a lead, it's about enjoying it and sort of, in a way, trying to keep the pressure off. But how do you feel about how happy you're making so many fans at the moment with the style of footy you're playing, the winning footy you're playing, the fact you're playing in September? How does that make you feel?
It's a very, very fulfilling. It's a really fulfilling job at the moment because there is people that come up in the street. You go and grab a coffee, and people come up and say good luck, and they really speak about. I think the big one is how proud they are of the group, and I think that's what Dimmer's alluding to there, is that in these situations and sometimes where clubs haven't had a lot of success, that they don't know how to deal with it, and they push back against their fans, and they. Fans are always going to crystal ball into the next week and to the next week and look at that final goal. But for us, it's about taking the little steps and continue to focus on the process. But who are we to shoot their dreams down? So we're embracing that. We're really opening our arms to our fans, and it's been because they've been there on the journey with us. I've been there for 11 years, and haven't achieved what I would like to achieve in those years, as every player wants to do. They want to play in the ultimate success and want to play in a successful side. So as much as the fans want to be involved with a successful football club. So look, we're in a great position at the moment. We've got a home final, which we'll have a lot of fans go to. And rather than pushing back on our fans and trying to dull it down, which we will do inside the football club, when we're out and about, why not enjoy it with them? Because they've been through the tough times as we've been through them as well.
What Jack's alluding to, Rammer, is that it's consecutive home finals for the Tigers.
It is, absolutely.
After the Geelong game.
Yeah.
Was that our final, was it? I thought that was theirs.
Well, apparently Geelong said it's Richmond's own.
Funny one in that one. Joel Selwood got asked if, as the away captain, what he'd like to call in the toss. So I'm not sure where the umpires knew whose final it was either.
It was the drummers.
The drummers. Oh, yeah. The noise of affirmation from the drummers.
Steve-O's very big on the fact you won because of the drummers.
You know, Steve-O reported the other day on the length of our socks. Has it really got to that?
The 19-centimetre mid-calf sock.
Yeah.
Has it been seen?
You could actually probably fold them, I reckon, Steve-O, so then they're not 19 centimetres. It's not rocket science.
Well, why do you wear half-length socks? What's wrong with the full length, just down the leg a bit?
Well, what would you wouldn't play in track pants, would you? You're playing shorts because they're more comfortable.
Michael Reeves wore
tracks. You were socks up half.
I was a socks up. So right, well, you got short legs. Although they probably told me to, at one stage, to have the socks right down the bottom, so it gave the illusion of length, which I certainly didn't
have. I think Cameron Ling had the long shorts in his under 18 years to make him look quicker. Maybe we're onto something there. The short socks makes you look faster.
Steve-O's all over that. Hard hitting.
Is from a team perspective, is that the best you've played? I thought over the whole ground, it was hard to find a bad player for Richmond on Friday night.
No, I don't think we had anyone that was that played poorly, and I think that just is a credit to our group and to the coaching staff and the I suppose the structure that we play. We play an extremely team orientated brand of football with obviously some great players in there that put in some unbelievable individual performances, but it's all based around team ethic. Nothing shows that more than a potential Brownlow medalist running through 50 metres to 40 metres and chipping over the top to a first-year player. So, we played well. We still think there's some areas that we can improve in. We know that we have to continue to perform at that level, if not higher, if we want to continue our journey on.
So what does this week bring with the week off? No Gold Coast trip to get a little bit of sun on the
Yeah, you'd be flat about that. Yeah. Adelaide or the Gold Coast for a couple of days.
Yeah, no, my skin tone doesn't allow the Gold Coast, so I'm staying right away from there. But no, look, we had a few days off, obviously the weekend off after a Friday night game sort of fit into the schedule well, and then we'll try and keep it pretty similar. So we'll have a main training today, as we would 3 days out from a game, or 2 days out from a game, sorry. Then have our captain's run tomorrow, and then we'll probably just have a training session that will sort of replicate a game intensity without sort of the bash and crash so much so as a normal game, but still the running and getting the time into the legs. We felt that through the two buys that we've had this year, that we've performed well off the buy from having a that sort of schedule. So we feel like it works well for us.
So two games in 4 weeks, now that's been spoken about from others, that it stops a little bit of momentum. What's your take on it? Do you feel the body freshening up as the days progress, or do you feel like, I just want to get back out there again?
Oh, I'm not buying into the fact that it's two games in 4 weeks. Like look, that's what it is, but who cares? Like, yes. It's footy. It's footy. You're playing in front of 95,000 people. It's just I think that what we're doing in terms of our training loads will hold us in good stead. Look, we get a freshen up, and then we. So I had 2 weeks off with the eye, obviously, and played 3 games, and had a week off, then played a game, then had a week off and played a game. But I'm feeling feeling really good, but it comes down to the way that we feel we can prepare. And as I said before, coming into the two byes this year, or coming off the two byes, sorry, we felt that we've performed well. So we'll run that same schedule and hopefully we can come out and perform well again.
Jack, outside of Richmond for a second, because that's clearly the story of the finals. It's fantastic. But one of the games of the year, one of the finals ever, was Saturday night with Port Adelaide and West Coast in terms of the drama with extra time. What were you doing when... Were you watching that game?
Yeah, I was watching on the iPad in bed.
Were you?
Yeah, so I watched the first half out on the couch and I was like, oh, I'll go to bed because I thought West Coast was going to win. Then
don't you have a TV in your room?
No.
Oh, that's...
I'm with you, Jack.
What's unforced error, that is.
Why not? I've got Foxtel Go on the iPad. Flip it over.
Mate,
get going.
Nice plasma in the bedroom. Come on.
It's a long way away. Foxtel, the app on the iPad, it's just right there. It's right in front of your face.
No.
Well, so I... And then the iPad was on low battery, ran out, so I had to get to the phone for the last. I was cursing when Eric McKenzie didn't run that point through. I was thinking, oh no, I've got to get the phone on. So it was an amazing game.
Done in Luke Shuey's situation? When he was taking that shot, were you imagining yourself being in that role? I could see you imagining yourself in that role and wanting that moment.
I suppose every kid, that's the dream in terms of kicking the goal after the siren. And we had Sam Lloyd do it last year against the Swans. In a final, in overtime, is a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I was looking at how many blokes are on the mark, actually, because you're only allowed to have one bloke on the mark at that stage.
Yeah, really, I know, so, that's true. Right.
But you look for the mannerisms, and Shuey looked confident the whole time.
He smiled before he...
Yeah, the whole time. So... an extremely good moment under huge pressure. But yeah, I think the big one is Josh Kennedy. The fact that he had a great start to the game, and then was fairly quiet, and then came to the floor again when they needed him. Kicked a couple of goals in that overtime period, and just kept them there. And Port probably could have converted a little bit better over the match and even in that extra time period. But Kennedy was the one. He just kicked a couple of crucial goals, kept him right in the hunt, and then obviously Shuey is the Iceman at the end and kicked the goal.
So do you watch the GWS West Coast game by yourself this week? Do you get together as a group and watch it together? What's the plan?
No, we haven't planned anything, so I think we just sit at home and watch it yourself. So
on the iPad in bed.
Yeah. No, might sit on the couch for that one. So we'll watch that and
Reserves
we'll find out.
Saturday.
They're playing on Saturday against Chris Newman's Box Hill Hawks.
Yeah,
so,
of course, coach of the year, Chris Newman.
Yep. So I'll be texting him all night Friday night, trying to keep him up, really rattle him. That's really exciting for us as well. And you guys obviously spoke to Jacob Townsend yesterday, who won the JJ Liston medal, which is a great start to the week for the guys. I know it's an individual award, but the players really hold I suppose it was really special for the group to have a guy win an award like that and then see the progress he's made over the back end of the season. We were a little bit worried that Dimmer has picked him to come up and play in the AFL side, and we thought he might have got overrun at the end there because he wasn't playing the last two games, but he held on and we had two blokes finishing in the top five, which was awesome.
So when do you have that conversation with him that he's probably kicking a little too many goals because he's sort of taking the...
Well, I had it last week, so I only kicked two on the weekend, but he's just... You couldn't ask for a guy to perform at the level... And play the way he's played this year. He just has continually come out and played well, waited for his opportunity. And that's exactly what you ask of guys that aren't getting a game at AFL level. And he, in every right, had played well and played six really good games and would have been well within his right to say, look, I need to be playing at AFL level and maybe crack the sads a little bit, but... Just kept at it, and we've had so many guys that have done that this year that it's shown that not only have we been a successful club at AFL level, that this week the guys are running out in a VFL prelim as well.
Can I ask you then to go the other way, right to the way to the other end of the list, to Trent Cotchin? Now, I heard you talk about this on AFL 360 during the week about how inspirational he was. Has he actually surprised you at what he's been able to do this year? And has he changed?
No, I don't think he surprised me in what he's been able to do. I've always rated him really, really highly. And I think you've only got to look back to the fact that albeit sort of a year after it all happened, he won a Brownlow medal. So he's an extremely good player, and I think what you're alluding to, why he's there, is that he's had poor performances in finals, and he's been a captain in those games. And I think you've just got to look at his honesty. Firstly, his honesty was through the teammates at the start of the preseason, and he really stripped it back, as did Damien. And then we've seen with the articles he's been writing for the paper this year, the honesty and just openness that he's shown. I think that it's been a real cleansing process for him, and it's been a real growth process as well, that now he feels like a sense of belonging and understands that that he's leading something special. And his performance in the first quarter on the weekend and was the nitty-gritty stuff, down and dirty, and then kicked a fantastic goal in the last quarter, real team goal.
Because, I mean, I actually wasn't alluding to his finals performances, but I was more alluding to the fact that I would have described him as a really nice footballer, whereas I think he's become more than just a really nice footballer now. He's tough, he's uncompromising, he's leading from the front with his actions, not with his kicks and his handballs, but with his leadership on the field. I think that seems to have gone to a whole new level.
Yeah, and I think just the support from the whole group, and probably more the senior guys that have been around for a while, just the support that we've all been able to provide each other in terms of not only just getting around each other, but playing well as a group together. So guys like Dustin's had a fantastic year this year. Alex has had a fantastic year. I'm playing my part. And you even look to guys like Sean Grigg, who's probably more of a lesser name and what a lot of people would consider a role player. They've had fantastic years. So he's been able to build his form off the back of that, not having to try and do everything himself through that midfield.
So I ask you, Half and Rammer, with Cochin, could it be as simple as the fact that he doesn't need to go and get 35 disposals, that it may be in the past he's felt that's what he needs to do,
yep,
to be, not so much to be a leader, but for Richmond to play well, he just needs to do that and go and chase the footy, as opposed to the role he's playing now, where he might only have 22 disposals, but it feels like he's had 32.
Yeah, I think the burden of expectation this year is far less for a guy like Trent, and even for Dustin. Now, he's stood up and been enormous and unbelievable, really. But when you introduce players like Caddy and Presti and you change your plan to a more forward pressure game, you don't need to be getting 35 and kicking three. You can just do your job, as Jackson said all year, just play your role for the team and get through. So I think it's a combination of personnel, mindset and game style, which has been able to free him up, so to speak, to just play the game and play the moment without the burden of having to be a superstar every single week.
Yeah, and I was at the round one game, Richmond versus Carlton, and you saw the depth in the midfield with Caddy and Prestia coming in. But I feel that Cochin and even Dustin Martin, they're getting the balls in better areas now where they're a lot more dangerous. And that's showing out, rather than, you know, getting the possessions behind centre where they're not having that impact. Mm. And, you know, that's what Jack and his forwards would want, because they're beautiful kicks of the football. So when they do get it forward to centre, Richmond are usually retaining the ball.
You don't feel now, also from your point of view, that you need to kick 6, 7, 8 goals for Richmond to win. You're comfortable in thinking, well, if I can just do this, this and this, the result takes care of itself.
Yeah, it's
interesting. Does that make it easier to play?
Yeah, it's interesting. My score involvements are still sort of around the same. And they might even be slightly higher than what they have been in previous years. But that's it, really. I basically am just trying to get involved in as many scores as possible, however possible. So we obviously have a pretty unique setup all over the ground. But the forward line especially, we don't play what people would consider a traditional forward line, and it works for us. And you've only got to look at some of the, what people would look at the paper and look at the stats of some of our forwards, and guys are only having maybe 8 to 10 touches, even less than that. But we've got a really good understanding of what is required for us to get the result that we need.
Rioli, 4 tackles. Castagna, 4 tackles. Rewalt, 5. Butler, 5. They're just part of the forward makeup. So it's not
4
just
good small forwards there.
Yeah. Pressure, forward half, turnover.
So this weekend, you got 2 games of football. Who's going to win, Jack? So Friday night?
Friday night, I think. I think the Swans are going too good at the moment, but I'll give the Cats a little bit of a chance, and I reckon Saturday night's going to be a cracker of a game. Does Natanui play?
No.
No, he doesn't. So. Big injury outs for the Giants, so we'll be watching with bated breath to see who we will play in that prelim final the week after.
Casper Ware is back in the colours. We are very, very pleased that he's joined us in the town, in the team, and on the Breakfast Club this morning. Good morning, Casper.
Good morning.
Great to have you back in town, mate. Are you happy to be back in Melbourne?
Yes, I'm very happy. You know, I was thinking about it all summer. You know, I had a great time last season with Melbourne, so I'm very excited to be back.
You had a huge impact on the team last year. The way you led the team in the point position was terrific to see you come in and just have such an impact so quickly. When you were weighing up the decision to come back to Melbourne, what were the other things going through your head? What other options did you have?
I had some options in Europe, you know, I could have took. But I felt like it wasn't, you know, the best decision for me. I had some camp invites, and I just felt like Melbourne was the place for me.
So what happens when you're sort of going through the process, Casper, of what team to play for? Firstly, how stressful is it for you?
It's very stressful because it's a hard decision. You're playing basketball, and you just got to sometimes put basketball aside and see what place fits you, the people around the city. So it makes it that much tougher.
Casper, when you're making that decision where you want to play your basketball, is the end game what you're thinking about? Is it, okay, my best chance to get back to the NBA or play in the NBA is to play in this league?
That takes part in your choice, you know, but at the end of the day, you want to have fun with it too, and you want to make sure you're enjoying the place you're at, and I enjoy Melbourne, so that's one play a part of my decision.
And we enjoy having you here. And what did you think of the standard last year when you came and were a part of the team? Did it surprise you, or were you expecting it because you'd spoken to other players that had been here before?
It surprised me a little bit, even though I did speak to other players that played here before, like James Ennis that played here now in the NBA. He told me about it, but it still surprised me, the talent and the level and how hard the basketball players play.
So the level of expectation now on Melbourne United this year rises again, obviously with missing the playoffs last year, but adding to the squad. How are you feeling about that? And secondly, how are you coming together as a squad at the moment?
I'm feeling really good about it. You know, we have a great group of guys. We're working together, working hard this preseason. So I feel like we're going to do a nice job this year.
Yeah, you played in the NBL Blitz on the weekend, the preseason competition. The Melbourne United won that, Casper, which is fantastic. But do you go into those things trying to win it, or as you talked about there, you're just trying to get some connection and some chemistry with your teammates?
The biggest thing I think is get connection and with your teammates. You just want to make sure they feel comfortable with your game. You're trying to fill them out. Make sure you just get on the same page.
And all the latest news in the world of AFL footy is given to us by Scott Cullen from the Herald Sun. He's back again. Good morning, Scotty.
Morning, Daniel. It's been a tough 12 hours.
Why? What's happened?
Another
No.
Oh. Another premiership campaign for Wednesday night basketball stopped at the semi-final phase.
Oh, no. Where are we playing?
Down in Cryo Leisure Centre or something. Yeah, it's disappointing. We played, they had one guy who was Larry Bird type scenario.
Oh, get it to Larry, get out the way.
And in Division C or whatever we are, he seemed to score a lot.
Did you think about manning him up?
Well, we tried, but we're amateur hour for us.
I imagine you sort of being like, you know, NBA-style player, yeah, end of the bench, waving sort of...
Oh, no, come on,
that sort of...
A towel,
waving a towel.
I'm the man, give me the ball, spread, get out of my
like
way.
Like Patty style. Mills, just really on the bench.
Energy
on the bench.
No, there's no bench.
Trolling.
I have minor subs every now and again, just to give others a go.
There's only four rock up, so there's no bench.
And then I wake up and see Luke Beveridge is confirming everything in my paper about Jake,
which would bring you great distress.
Well, I've been living on this.
To tell you,
I know. I've been living on this dream that it's a scare tactic. It appears not to be a scare tactic.
But do you like that from Luke Beveridge?
Yeah, because it clears the air. I think it. Yeah, I agree with what you said, Ram. It tells Bulldogs fans, and I'm acting as a fan. Yes, he's going if we get the right deal. If not, we'll make it
work with him.
And I don't agree that now. He has to be a top 10 pick to me. I mean, you're not going to get top five, but you can't get pick 18 for Jake String. I'm sorry. I don't. Surely the Bulldogs get that. That's the only worry I have with this scenario now. Get the right deal. I think we'll all be prepared for it.
I think they've lost a little bit of their leverage with that conversation between Bevo and your mate Robbo.
Yep,
I think they lose a bit of that leverage because they're happy for him to go. They're basically pushing him out the door. They said they'll work with him, which is what you have to say in the end of the scenario. But if you're going to go out publicly like this and put a big story back on the back page of the paper, the biggest paper in the country, surely that says we're happy for him.
But there also is a part of it that says we can work with him. He's got a year to go.
Yeah, but that's clearly what you're going to say because you want to have some sort of leverage in the discussion.
No. Yeah, but the opposite is we're not trading him.
Yeah, which is a lie. So do you want him to lie?
Yeah, no. Well, wouldn't matter because that's just what happens anyway. I'm happy with the fact he's got the front foot, but I just think it reduces their leverage.
Their hand.
Yeah, I reckon it does.
Well, I think if a club really wants him, they need to come with a decent deal or it'll become the Adelaide Bryce Gibbs. Oh, yeah, we really, really want you. And then, well, we're not offering anything.
And that becomes then the manager's role to create the market.
Yeah. Anyway, it's not
so offering. So that's a good question to talk about. How do you create the market? What does that mean?
Well, you got to go and talk to clubs and see who really wants him. And there will be numerous clubs that really want him. But
so how do you sell it? So if you're Jake, well, leave the individual out. But if there's a player, how do you sell it to the club?
This is an easy sell.
Yeah, I was going to say, does it just take care of itself or?
He's an All-Australian. He's a premiership player. He's 23 years old. He's that medium type of forward that is an impossible matchup.
With hybrid. He's a game breaker, isn't he? Yeah,
Jake Stringer is an easy sell to another football club.
All you'd sell is the kid had issues, we've heard about him, he's focused, he's ready to go, and you're away.
Which team that are contending at the moment need goal-kicking power?
Well, everyone.
Well, there's your market.
And you go to the clubs, you help create you should use this pick. Yeah, because you talk with them about what picks they've got, how they can manipulate it. Oh, it's disappointing.
Are you? And this is a very serious question. Are you worried about what is happening to the Bulldogs with all that is spoken about and speculated on, and now we see something like this actually happen? Are there genuine concerns down there?
Yeah, there are, because to me, they won the premiership, and I thought you keep this group together because they're young. Like Hawthorn, everyone refers back to Hawthorn, but it is like that. And then they'll win a couple more in 2 or 3 years because they'll go through together. Now you're taking a key piece of that. I know Jake was a bit iffy when they won the flag, but he was there. And so you take that out. So there has to be something wrong. Why can't the coaches and the development, why can't they keep him happy, keep him on the straight and narrow? Is he the scapegoat for a heap of others who aren't behaving? We hear those stories. So yes, there's a hangover, I get that, but why do we have to take a key piece out and get rid of him?
Can you answer me this? I can't answer that question. Can you answer this one for me? Why isn't Jason McCartney re-signed?
Well,
he built this list with Simon Dalrymple. Why hasn't he re-signed this football club after 12 months after a premiership?
Well, the football club doesn't have a CEO. They've had about three in the last 2 weeks. You know, there's not a lot of stability there.
Three CEOs in 2 weeks.
Peter Gordon, and you can never, you know, he created a premiership, he's put a lot of money in, but he's very difficult to work with. So there's instability in head office, the football department.
But surely they're separate. You've got a football department that clearly worked 12 months ago, or had, up until that time, the previous 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 or 5 years, had built the list to a stage where it was a premiership list. Now, it might have been a touch fluky, depending on which corner you're sitting in.
It should have been signed but a premiership last list. Year after they won a premiership.
We are getting ready for semi-final action against Belgium in Brussels for the Australian Davis Cup team. And we've been able to track down the captain of the team, one of the all-time greats of Davis Cup tennis, full stop, let alone Australian Davis Cup tennis. He's come straight from the dinner, the official dinner. And it's a very good morning to Leighton Hewitt. G'day, Leighton.
Hey, boys. How you doing?
We are terrific, mate. How are you doing? You get excited still about Davis Cup campaigns and being on the eve of one?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially the way things have panned out this year. It was a goal to really have a crack at the Davis Cup this year, and we've got a pretty young team as well, and not the most experienced players in Davis Cup, and we've given ourselves a great opportunity this week now through to the semi-finals here in Belgium, and the great part about playing Davis Cup is the home and away aspect, and this is going to be a big challenge playing away on their chosen surface, which is clay.
You mentioned the age group of the squad, and I went through that yesterday. 20 to 23 is pretty much the age group you got there, and it's extraordinarily young to be able to achieve this success or a semi-final opportunity at this stage. I mean, how proud are you of what you've been able to achieve with these boys?
Yeah, no, it's been great. You know, I knew these guys because I played with a lot of them the last couple of years of my career, especially in Davis Cup. But for me, it was about getting to know them and their personalities on and off the court. And, you know, that's dealing with them and how they handle pressure and under expectation of playing in big matches as well for their country. And I couldn't be prouder of the close-knit team that we have now. We've had each other's back, and it's not just in the Davis Cup weeks, but it's been all weeks round on the ATP Tour as well and at the Grand Slam. So, yeah, we've had some pretty special moments this year, and hopefully this weekend just another one of those.
Leighton, we talk to a lot of AFL players, and they talk about when they get away with the group for an interstate trip that it gets them closer together and it can really build some strong cultural values moving forward. Is that the same in a Davis Cup situation when you travel overseas and to a country like Belgium?
Yeah, it is in some ways. This is my first away tie as captain, actually, in my first 2 years doing it. But I know certainly as a player, I actually enjoy, you know, even though you play and you're under the pump from the crowd and it's a lot of noise and tough concentrating, I really fed off that as well because I could look over at my bench, my captain and coach and our small supporters there and really focus in. And there's not a lot of distractions either when you're overseas, whereas sometimes when you're playing at home, there's obviously so many family and friends wanting to come and watch and the media attention, you're really under the spotlight. So we've been able to gel together and bond even more as a team. And as you said, some of these guys haven't played in that many big matches in Davis Cup. So it's going to be a big challenge, especially playing away from home with their crowd this week.
So what do you do? I mean, you can only be on the court so long when you're away. I've noticed that just with some of the photos and some of the stuff on social media, you've been working really hard as a team. So what are the sort of things you're doing on court and off court?
Well, a lot of the on-court stuff is the preparation for the boys. You know, we've got to try and get enough singles practice into them as possible, but also we've got a few options with the doubles combination as well, depending on what happens on the Friday. So we're just trying to really find a good combination with that and trying to get as much toughness in them as possible. And obviously, adjusting to the clay court, that's been the biggest difference because the boys have come straight off the US hard courts over the US Open in New York. But I couldn't be prouder of how committed they've been and their dedication to get straight onto it. They came straight over from New York, straight to Brussels, and you know, they really hit the ground running.
Leighton, you had Nikyrgios say he'd run through a brick wall for you. How have you been able to instill that team culture? You're one of Australia's greatest ever players, of course, and would bleed for the country. How have you been able to bring that to your captaincy with the Davis Cup team?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it was understanding this in a lot of ways. And I was fortunate enough that I played a couple of ties with him towards the end of my Davis Cup playing career. So he understood what I stood for in Davis Cup and I guess what I expected as well as a player and then moving into the captain's role. But, you know, having guys like Jordan Thompson around and then, you know, John Millman and these guys, Tanasi now coming in, and they've been such good influences on the likes of Nick, especially, but not just Davis Cup weeks. Like, we've really tried to hunt in a pack through this whole year. And it's pretty tough being an Australian player and actually travelling on the road. It's a pretty lonely time sometimes on the tour. So when we get the opportunity to come together, we sort of hang out at most of the tournaments together. So it feels like we are travelling in that pack team environment. And I think the boys are really fed off that.
The selection of Tanasi, can you explain that? Obviously, Millman has been in some really good form, but not in the squad at the moment.
Yeah. So there's he was in the squad of five. We have to pick four, obviously, going into it. Tanasi, he had a really breakthrough tournament in Los Cabos, which, you know, he beat Thomas Berdych, another really quality top 10 player there to make through his first ATP final. So he's had a tough couple of years with injury, but we feel like his body's starting to hold up and, you know, he's putting his hand up, that's for sure.
If there's brick walls the players want to run through, I suggest you keep the brick walls away from them for the next couple of days, like, just by the way.
It depends how thick it is. I don't know.
But it is interesting, and from Nick's perspective particularly, because a quote that I read the other day about him, or the last night, was that I literally love playing for someone other than myself for once. To get the best of him, do you feel that even week to week, and you talked about hunting in a pack as a group throughout the tour through the year, that he needs that support, that level of selflessness through the involvement of other people?
Yeah, he does. absolutely. And we've tried to do that. And I think the weeks that you'll find that he's played well throughout this year, which has been the Cincinnati, the final, that epic tournament in Miami where he made the semi-finals, which was the week right before the Davis Cup. He played well in Indian Wells Master Series as well. And we had a couple of the boys travelling with him through that time. So, you know, it's a matter of trying to find a good balance for him as well. You know, we know that he's going to have his ups and downs. He's a very flashy player as well. But when he's on, he's extremely talented. And it's just about trying to put it all together for more weeks throughout the year.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club from this morning. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.